Swagoo and Perk, a new ESPN podcast led by its namesake host, former NFL veteran and analyst Mark Spears, a.k.a. Swagoo, and NBA champion and analyst Kendrick Perkins. With new episodes every Tuesday morning, Spears and Perkins will bring listeners the latest NBA and NFL news, as well as a look inside their lives, career journey with can't-miss conversations, and welcome in top sports and celebrity guests. That's Swagoo and Perk. Listen wherever you get your podcasts and also available on ESPN's YouTube channel. Welcome into Daily Wager Extra Podcast. I'm Doug Kazarian. We are taping this on Sunday night, November 7th. This is week 9, and we had some serious upsets, some seriously head-scratching outcomes. We're going to get into all that with Mackenzie Kramer momentarily, but just a really, really healthy reminder as to what exactly the NFL betting world is all about, to just expect the unexpected. So let's get into it as we bring in ESPN researcher Mackenzie Kramer. Mac, how can you summarize today?
Just another wild day. I think the main overarching point is that five underdogs of at least 5 points all won outright today. It's the first time that's happened on a single day since 2006. Underdogs went 9-3 against the spread, 7-5 outright. It's the second straight week's dogs have an outright winning record, third time it's happened this season. And the last 2 weeks, underdogs 15-12 outright, 19-7-1 against the spread. So underdogs continue to bark in the National Football League.
The only favorites to cover this week were the Colts on Thursday night. And even then, that came down to a pick in the, inside the five. Dolphins got there, hung on. Patriots dominated the Panthers, especially in the second half. And then the Chargers, game-winning field goal as time expires. So there were four favorites that covered, and it was very close to being less than that. Survivor pools took a serious beating. How can you put into context through the Eliminator Challenge lens exactly what happened here?
Well, three of the five most popular teams on the board all lost outright this week. The Colts were the most popular team, so they won, but you saw the Cowboys go down. They were 18%. The Saints lost. They were a little bit further down the board.
Bills.
Yes, the Bills. I'm sorry. I couldn't find it on my notes right here, but the Bills lost.
Well, that would have been a much higher number if more people had Buffalo remaining.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's always the key. It's like a lot of people use the Colts against Houston. The Bills have been popular several times this week. Dallas, Buffalo, and Las Vegas were among the five most popular selections Eliminator Challenge. So another rough week in Survivor. I went down with the Saints, so my dreams all died with the Saints, which seems to happen every year with the Saints. I never learned my lesson with them.
Yeah, I had the Cowboys in one pool and Buffalo in the other. But I stayed alive in Circa, so in all three entries. So I was able to do Miami and Ravens come back and win in overtime. So that was – and then I had Indy on Thursday night. So carnage, serious carnage in survivor pools. People the last couple weeks are like, it's too easy. You got to go with the losing team. So the winning team, you can't use it twice. It's like, settle down. Like, we've seen some ridiculous comebacks – like, you know, the Tucker field goal in week 2, I want to say, at Detroit, 66 yards. So some serious carnage. It's now getting interesting if you are still alive in your survivor pools down to the last few. I want to just kind of get into some games. Cowboys, look, we talk about the NFL, how it's, you know, you come off, it's all about spots, right? Like, you come off a huge win, and you're going to have a letdown, kind of like Michigan State, many thought could happen on Saturday, and it did. And you're also getting everyone's best shot. The Broncos, I don't know if they were motivated with the trade of Von Miller, but they were fired up, and Dallas just didn't have it. They just didn't have the same sort of energy as they did last week.
And it's the first time all year the Cowboys don't cover against the spread. They dropped a 7-1 against the spread. Denver kind of did what you have to do in this game. Bridgewater went 6-for-7 on third down. They ran for 190 yards. They kept Dallas off the field. They controlled the ball for over 42 minutes in this game. And then the Cowboys, they went 0-for-4 on fourth down. Dak Prescott completing less than 50% of his passes. He entered the day first in the NFL in completion percentage. And then Teddy Bridgewater, once again, on the road, 19-3 against the spread as a road underdog in his career. So Teddy Bridgewater on the road continues to be a cash cow for bettors.
It's truly remarkable. I still don't understand how the Jaguars beat the Bills without scoring a touchdown. The 9-6 is just insane.
First game this season without a touchdown. I'm still not quite sure how that happened either. But, yeah, 15.5 points was the line on that game with the Jaguars pulling off the outright upset. It's the fourth straight year we've had at least a 15 point upset. We didn't have a single one in the previous 22 years, and now it's happened four straight years. That stretch actually started in 2018 when Josh Allen and the Bills upset the Vikings, and now Josh Allen and the Bills are on the other end of it. So Josh Allen entered the week as the MVP favorite at 3-1, and you have to imagine that he's going to fall off a little bit, but pretty much all the MVP favorites struggled this week, so it's going to be interesting to see how those odds get reposted.
Yeah, no, it's going to be very interesting. The Bills had the easy schedule, right, remaining after they won at Arrowhead, and now it's been really just head-scratching performance. Even last week, they were only up six late at home against the Dolphins and then end up winning by double digits, but just really puzzling results. I mean, exciting, and that's why we love the NFL, but really, really bizarre result. Let's go to the couple games that had line moves with quarterback movement. Aaron Rodgers, we know about that. It closes seven. And Jordan Love did not look very good, but he didn't get any help from Mason Crosby either. A couple missed field goals, and then he did get the backdoor cover, though.
Packers, eighth straight cover for them. They're down 8-1 against the spread. It ties the Bills last year for the longest streak in the last three seasons. But as for the Chiefs, it's hard to be impressed with what you're seeing with the Chiefs offense right now. They can't seem to get the ball down the field at all. And they're now a half game back in the AFC West, but I can't really trust the Chiefs at all. I mean, that offense is not looking good at all. The defense did show up today, but I don't know how much of that is just Jordan Love struggling and how much of that is the Chiefs defense. But even with the win, you still leave with a lot of doubts about Kansas City.
The defense has played a little better. Now, granted, not exactly playing Tom Brady and company, but I will say that it's looked a little sharper and more connected, which is something I couldn't have said in the past. And that's just my vibe. But think about the Chiefs' five wins. They beat the Packers without Aaron Rodgers. They beat the three worst teams in the NFC East, so the non-Cowboy teams in that division. And then week one against the Browns, where they came back and Mahomes was out of this world. So verdict is still out on Kansas City, justifiably. Now, the other game, we did see Kyler Murray scratched. It happened. We kind of anticipated the line move certainly suggested that was coming, and no DeAndre Hopkins. And the Niners just shot themselves in the foot, couldn't recover a fumble. Arizona got every fumble, got the face mask on fourth down when Colt McCoy got stuffed, and then they just are not that good playing from behind.
And they also shot themselves in the foot with coaching decisions. Kyle Shanahan not going for two to cut it to 16 yep. late. They punted in Cardinals territory in the fourth quarter, down by three scores. So I'm not quite sure what Shanahan's thinking right there. Shanahan now 11-21-2 ATS as a favorite in his career. So he's been really bad as a favorite. But as for the Cardinals, they're now 5-0 on the road this year with all five wins by double digits. They've been an underdog four times this year. They've won all four times, all by at least 14 points. In fact, today's win was actually the closest one out of the four. So big game for Cliff Kingsbury, coach of the year futures.
Yeah, no, you know what? McCarthy was the favorite going into last week, but you wonder if that's sort of where we're headed with Kingsbury, because he really put on a clinic today.
Well, the guy I bet on really last week is I bet on Mike Vrabel at 20-1 earlier in the week after Henry went down, kind of hoping that they would put up a good record against that division. If they start playing better on offense without Henry, Vrabel will get credit for it. So I'm hoping that ticket's pretty live, especially after the win over the Rams. But Kingsbury, you have to imagine, is the favorite after winning without Kyler Murray.
Yeah, I would say Kingsbury and Vrabel would be my two choices right now. I would make them the favorites just off the top of my head. I'm sure I'm forgetting someone and can't think of it, but that's really impressive. Vrabel, let's talk about the Sunday night game. Obviously, I was all about the Rams, completely no-showed. And I'll tell you what, man, what we saw with Denver, what we saw with Arizona, and when guys go down, they get the kitchen sink from everyone. I mean, look how fired up Tennessee was, at least in the first half. And we thought the Rams would be ready to flip the switch, but they were just kind of going through the motions like they were playing those three bad teams. Like they came in playing the Giants, the Lions, and the Texans. It was sort of but give the coaching credit. And then Collinsworth pointed out in the broadcast second half, he got Stafford on the rollout, and that was much more easier to create pass lanes. But, you know, they ended up getting stalling on offense and kicking field goals.
Stafford entered the day first at total QBR by a pretty wide margin. You have to imagine, we haven't gotten the QBR numbers yet for that game, but he's going to slip a little bit after that game. But got to give a lot of credit to the Titans defense in that one. The Titans defense has been pretty maligned all year, but they pressured Stafford all game. They forced him into that wild pick six at the beginning of the game, or the wild interception at the beginning of the game that helped set up the Titans. And then he threw another pick six right after that. But the Titans, they've now won four straight games as an underdog of at least 3 points. They're the fourth team to do that in the Super Bowl era. And they're now 5-0 outright as an underdog this year. So they're basically the AFC version of the Cardinals. They're the first team since the 2009 Bengals to win their first five games of the season as an underdog. And Mike Vrabel in his career, 16-10 outright as a dog now. So Vrabel as a dog, really strong trends there.
I like how Collinsworth put it about that defense. They just play tough. Like, they're just hit you. You know, we did radio this morning, and everyone's just kind of dismissing the Titans, right? It's just like, one of those teams that just kind of plays the first weekend of the playoffs and maybe the second weekend, but not really a true contender. Now, the Derrick Henry injury obviously matters, but it's about time and I'm looking at myself in the mirror, it's about time the Titans started getting some respect.
I doubted them pretty heavily early in the year. I was on this podcast talking about how that division was, and I think I said the division winner would be lucky to be over 500. Clearly, I was wrong about that, but I still have some doubts about the Titans, though. Their offense did not look good today. Tannehill only had 143
in the
air. They couldn't really run the ball, so I still am kind of doubtful in terms of what the Titans' offense will look like the rest of the year. The rest of their schedule is not that bad. Five of their last, they still have five more home games the rest of the year. Got a couple against Houston, so I think the Titans will. I mean, they're obviously going to win that division, and they're going to put up a gaudy record. But come playoff time, I still have a lot of doubts with Tennessee.
I'm curious to see where they are in a week or two on that offense, because the running game was non-existent, and I know the Rams defense can be formidable, so let's see what it is against other teams. They had a couple drops. That's not going to happen. So Tannehill played okay, and then they played like conservative in the second half, just protecting the lead and wanted to get the clock moving. So it's hard to really assess them, but you could see the void that Derrick Henry created with his absence for sure.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The other afternoon game I touched on, at Chargers-Eagles, went back and forth. Classic situation, and then, you know, the Chargers kick a game-winning field goal. Staley goes for it on fourth down to keep possession instead of kicking a 50-something yarder, something what everyone wanted Belichick to do when the Patriots hosted Brady and the Bucks earlier in the year in the rain on Sunday night.
Yeah, I think he actually went for it twice on that final possession on fourth down. So
yeah, I think you're right.
I love Brandon. I love when coaches do that. So I'm a huge Brandon Staley fan. That was also a big win for the public. 91% of the tickets, 97% of the money were on the Chargers. So in a week where a lot of underdogs won and the public didn't necessarily have the best week, that was one game that went the public's way.
Yeah, we didn't really touch on it. It sounded like the dogs barking, all these upsets. That's good for the house. Let's just put it that way. All the parlays. But one odds maker told me recently, he's like, you don't want too many of them because some knuckleheads will parlay them all. So you got to be careful. You just want a couple pieces to the puzzle not to fit, right? You want a couple upsets. You don't want a bunch because there are guys putting three or four of them together and parlay.
Have the favorites win, but not cover.
Well, that's good, but you want some to lose outright for the teasers and the parlays, the money line parlays. But you don't want too many dogs to win outright because that amplifies all the money line parlays on the dogs too.
Absolutely.
So you want a hodgepodge. That's sort of what they say. Trying to think, going to the early games, Houston, Miami. Let's put a bow on it. I said it on air. It was like one of the few things I said right was like, hey, let's pump the brakes on Tyrod Taylor being the savior. Yes, he's way better than Davis Mills, but it's still okay to use Miami in eliminator. It's still okay to lay points against the Texans with Miami. But then the Tua scratch, that really kind of caught me off guard.
That line opened 7. It closed at 4. Dolphins won by 8, so the line move didn't end up mattering. I mean, I didn't watch that much of that game because if there's a bunch of NFL games, that would obviously be the one I would not want to watch. But they combined for 9 turnovers in that game. So really ugly game, but good for Miami snapping a 5-game streak without covering the spread. So they're back in the winning column.
If Tua plays, they win by like 30. I mean, like, Brissett has just no awareness, takes sacks when he doesn't need to get out of the field goal range. Just like a lot of unaware plays. It was really poor, and the turnovers were terrible. Dolphins dominated at least the first half or so. And I guess I was sweating it out the survivor pool, but man, that was a painful one to watch. Speaking of painful, I can imagine what the Raiders are going through right now. It's been an unusual week, to say the least. And they had to travel the Giants. We weren't sure whether it could be, hey, change of scenery, get kind of clear of their minds. Maybe it's going to be a shot in the arm they needed. Or human element. Imagine everything going on this week. They just have, you know, there's no way they could kind of play a football game. And it was close. You know, you don't want to point fingers on anything or chalk it up to anything or blame anything. But it was certainly a situation where, you know, there was a tough ask the Raiders to go on the road for there.
It's hard to see a team dealing with as much off the field stuff as the Raiders have dealt with this year between the Gruden stuff and the Henry Ruggs stuff. It's just been a really emotional toll of a season for the Raiders so far. And they're still right there. They're still tied for first place in the AFC West. And they get the Chargers next week in Vegas. So that'll be an interesting game to see where those two teams are at.
I believe the Chiefs are next week, actually.
I thought I said that, but sorry if I didn't. Oh, but I was a little concerned about the Raiders coaching in this game, taking two field goals on 4th and 3 from the 7-yard line with the team trailing. And Daniel Carlson actually ended up missing one of them, so that ended up looking pretty bad for them. But I'm curious how the Raiders will respond from this. Giants, you know, they've always struggled as a home underdog the last few years. They're 4-9 ATS entering the game with Daniel Jones as a home dog. So they're now 5-9. But, you know, good win for the Giants at the Meadowlands against Vegas.
Yeah, my dog of the day play. Giants, G-men. Get it outright. You mentioned your Saints eliminator pick. That was a crazy comeback, only to see the Falcons go back and kick a game-winning field goal. So certainly, you know, this game was at halftime 10-0. Okay? Just to give people concept. And it somehow goes over the total of 43.5. It shatters it almost. 52 it lands. 27-25, Falcons improved to 4-4. They're right there in the playoff mix. Let's not sleep on Atlanta. And although just having Ridley out is just definitely an issue, but total flat spot for the Saints, much like the Cowboys, right? Huge win last week in a big-time moment, so to speak, and then just kind of it's tough to get up, and that's what makes this Titans run so impressive. They're getting up for all these games.
And the Falcons tried to Falcon it away. I mean, 18-point lead in the fourth quarter would have been the largest blown lead in the fourth quarter since Super Bowl 51 when the Patriots came back against the Falcons. The Saints, though, I talk about this a bunch on the show. Like, I don't like laying points with the Saints, even though apparently I picked them in Survivor. But they're 0-4 against the spread when laying at least 3 points this season, 1-3 straight up in that spot. But when they're an underdog or a shorter favorite, they're 4-0 against the spread and outright. So when the Saints are big favorites, they tend to lay eggs. And when they're underdogs, that's when they tend to show up. So you'd think that I would learn my lesson on the Saints as I talk about this every week, but it came through again this week.
Well, picking them in Survivor versus picking them as a laying point is very different, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a lot of planning ahead. It was really just them or Miami, and I opted for New Orleans at the last second, which obviously I regret.
Well, in the same vein, when you talked about the Saints, you said the same thing about the Patriots, right? You don't like to lay points with them, but they did take care of business. Sam Darnold was just baffled again, seeing ghosts perhaps. He did not want to face a Belichick defense, made some bad plays. I think he's mediocre at best. So I've always been questioning the praise that people had on him, even coming out of USC, and I'm a USC guy. But for the most part, the Patriots made the plays. The Panthers did not.
Yeah, I might have to amend my theory about the Patriots. I mean, this is basically the Patriots' formula: dominate the game defensively and don't make mistakes offensively. They didn't even have 300 yards in the game, but they held the Panthers to 240 yards with 3 turnovers. You mentioned Sam Darnold. He's faced the Patriots 4 times in his career. He's got 1 touchdown pass in those games with 9 interceptions, 0-4 against the spread. Some people thought Darnold might play better this week with Christian McCaffrey back in the lineup. The Panthers had been 3-0 against the spread when McCaffrey had played, but you know it didn't happen for them today. And Darnold, and his total QBR today, scale of 1 to 100, put up a 3. So rough game for Sam Darnold.
I'm going to venture to say that's not very good.
Not great, Bob. But the Patriots, though, they're now they're a half game back in that division. And if Damian Harris doesn't fumble in week one against Miami, New England might be in first.
It's crazy. My Belichick Coach of the Year ticket still live, by the way.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
So two big games and great games, or at least one was, that we have yet to touch on. Let's go Browns-Bengals, Battle of Ohio, such hoopla surrounding Cleveland given the Odell Beckham Jr. release. And going on the road, this Bengals team had shot itself in the foot a couple times, got away with it against Jacksonville, did not get away with it against the Jets. So maybe we're expecting like a good performance from Cincy, given that it was not off a big win or anything, but the pick near the goal line on the opening drive and really never got back to them. Cleveland dominated this one in Cincy.
And it was all about the big plays. They're the first team since the merger with a passing touchdown, a rushing touchdown, and a defensive touchdown, all of at least 60 yards. They had the 99-yard pick six, the 60-yard touchdown by Donovan Peoples-Jones, and then Chubb had that 70-yard run. So it was all about the big plays for the Browns. The Bengals, now they go to a bye week coming after losing to the Jets, getting blown out by the Bengals, getting blown out by the Browns. It's interesting to see where the Bengals are situated coming out of the bye next week.
Yeah, this is a long season. Let's not forget the Bucs last year lost to the Bears on Thursday night. Remember, Tom Brady didn't know what down it was. It's such a long season. We've seen so many teams peak at the end of the year, and they talked about it in the broadcast. They even sent some players sitting out when they went normally that extra week. It's basically load management. I'm not saying they're there yet or anywhere close to the NBA, but there is an element of a marathon, not a sprint, and you can sense that with some of this. And some of the teams are peaking too early, perhaps. And that's what, again, goes back to what I've said about the Titans earlier. It's just so impressive what they're doing, these monumental, high-profile games, and they're just bringing it and hitting, and it's very impressive. And they do it again without Derrick Henry. Vikings-Ravens game, probably the game of the day, unless I'm missing one. 34-31, Ravens win in overtime, their second possession. So both defenses hold. It wasn't like they traded field goals either. And then Justin Tucker connects. This was all Minnesota early, and Baltimore comes back, and it's just an impressive run for the Ravens. They've been playing with fire. They don't cover. They're 1-5 this year as a favorite?
I don't have that in front of me, but I know they've done poorly as a favorite, that's for sure.
Yeah. What other stats stood out? So Mike Zimmer blows it lead, shocker, and Vikings fall to 3-5. Ravens 6-2, they're right there in the playoff mix. I know they're already there in the playoff mix, but they're among the contenders now in the AFC.
Well, you mentioned the double-digit comeback by the Ravens. It's now their third double-digit comeback of the year, most in the NFL. We used to always talk about the Ravens as a front-running team with Lamar Jackson. You want to get them ahead. They want to run the ball. Like, they had never come back from double digits down before the season, and now they've done it three times this year. So Lamar Jackson clearly is making some strides in the passing game. Today, he kind of dominated in the short passing game as opposed to the big deep balls to Marquise Brown like he had been doing in the past. The Ravens nearly pulled an Urban Meyer today, going nearly 250 yards rushing and 250 yards passing. So they almost got that done.
You call that the Urban Meyer?
Well, that's what he wanted to do. That's what he said he wanted to do.
I missed that quote.
But every Vikings game, though, seems to come right down to the final play. They've had 7 one-score games this year. They've had 5 one-score losses this season. I mean, I was on Minnesota in that game. I was on them at 6. I was surprised I went up to 7. I'm just going to take Minnesota to get the point. And if I'm getting over a field goal, I'm going to take them unless they're playing like a really good team or a really bad spot, because every Minnesota game comes right down to the wire, and it's Greg Joseph kept lining up for a go-ahead field goal, or it's whoever they're playing lining up for a go-ahead field goal. Every game comes right down to the wire in Minnesota.
All right, that covers the Sunday card Monday night. I mean, it's ridiculous, the spread and with the total, right? You had 6.5 and 39, or it's up to 7 and 39. I can't lay 7. I don't want 7 either. These are the types of games the Bears win, though. I will say that. Steelers tend to win as a dog, choke this one away. I have a feeling Steelers win this by 3 late or in overtime, kind of like that Sunday night game against Seattle.
Yeah, to me, this is a dog or pass kind of game. You can't. It's hard to justify laying 7 points with the Steelers, though. If you tell me that Justin Fields has one of the worst games all season by a quarterback and the Steelers win 27-3, I wouldn't be that surprised by that either. The total in this game is 39 right now, which would tie the lowest of the season. The Texans-Patriots game from a few weeks back also was 39. So low total expected in that game. I don't really have a strong lean, though.
Yeah, my only play is first half under. I think both teams, and it's crazy saying this about Big Ben, but are going to protect their quarterbacks and be pretty vanilla. I say it all the time in defensive matchups. They want to wait for the other team to make the mistake, lean on your defense. And then sometimes in the second half, things get crazy, right? There's a going for it around midfield on fourth down, or pressing. A quarterback throws into double coverage when they're down 10. You get a pick six or short field for the other team's offense after a turnover. That's why I like to go first half unders when it's a low, low number.
And if you want the first quarter under is at 7. So a really low first quarter under in this game.
I gave out under 7.5 in the Air Force Army game. I was like, well, you really only need one punt. I think it was 0-0 until the second half. But
you just blind bet the unders in Service Academy games when they're playing other Service Academies. But that is the best trend in college football.
But it's a fascinating topic because obviously the units of scoring in football are 3 and 7, and there's no sense of urgency at the end of the first and third quarters. So when you get the hook, do they make the juice right? So if it's 7.5 versus 6.5, like, is the juice accurate enough given the likelihood and how slow those tempos are and how they just will grind on the ground, and the fact that the defenses are used to facing that type of offense in practice as opposed to other teams on their schedule?
Yeah, it's definitely a fascinating topic in terms of which is better, laying a quarter price or laying a half price. I haven't dug too deep into which one's better. I always like getting the quarter prices because I'm with you. I like, you know, the teams aren't motivated to score at the end of the first and the third, but, you know, you're also going to get lower numbers doing it that way. So it's a little bit of a give and a take.
Yeah, one freak play. Well, I'm going first half of the Steelers-Bears game. Have some fun with it. Nothing too crazy. But great stuff as always, Mackenzie. Always good. You're always have awesome, awesome notes and research done for these podcasts. And I know our listeners greatly appreciate it. Any notes that we left out in terms of kind of put a bow on this week 9 Sunday?
Well, one thing I mentioned earlier was with the MVP race, I kind of wanted to touch on. So if you look at the 6 MVP favorites entering this week, Josh Allen was the 3-1 favorite. He lost the Jaguars, didn't throw a touchdown pass. Kyler Murray was 2nd at 5-1. He didn't play because of an injury. Tom Brady was 3rd at plus 550. He didn't play because of bye week. He's the only one whose stock didn't fall this week. Matthew Stafford struggled and lost to the Titans. They lost as an upset. Dak Prescott was plus 750. They lost to Denver. He didn't complete half his passes. And Aaron Rodgers didn't play due to COVID. So pretty much all the favorites for MVP fell apart this week. So we mentioned it a little bit earlier, but I would imagine that Tom Brady is probably the favorite going into next week.
And their schedule gets easier in November, December. Now, obviously, things can change. We thought the Bills would have an easy schedule going into, you know, Jacksonville. So anything can happen. But it is going to be really interesting to see how it all plays out because the NFC was so stacked with one-loss teams. Obviously, that's not the case anymore after the Rams. But, oh God, it's fat. It's really hard in one-way betting markets to find value. Are you coming around at all in Mahomes? I'm not.
No, not at all.
They're ways away.
Not at all. I have plenty of Mahomes bets in my accounts. I thought about doubling down a couple weeks ago, but I am completely off of that bandwagon. I don't really see him winning that award. They already have 4 losses, and his numbers aren't going to be as good as other guys. I think there's going to be a better narrative around Brady. I think there'll be a better narrative around Stafford. Unless the Chiefs...
Or just whoever gets the one seed, right? Like, yeah. Or, you know, that team's going to have to play well because of the quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you necessarily need the one seed, but yeah, I would definitely want a division winner, that's for sure. And I don't...
It's a good point. Yeah. One or two seed, basically, history has shown us. All right, my man. Thank you again. And thanks, everyone, for downloading, listening. I hope you enjoy the fact that we post these pods Sunday night, have them fresh Monday mornings as well, especially if you're on the East Coast, you're not up this late waiting for this pod. But we try to have this raw and reaction and get you all set on the work week in the proper fashion, breaking down the Sunday action in the NFL.